Hey everyone, Brian from All Day Rock Off here, and today I've got Paul Litchfield on the podcast. Really excited to have him on. Litch is one of the major contributors to the GORUCK MACV1 boots and pretty much all of GORUCK's footwear. He used to work for Reebok. He's the inventor of the Reebok pump. He's got a lot of stuff to his name, and it's just really cool getting to know him a little bit better. In this episode, we talk about how Litch got involved with GORUCK, his first event, and then we start getting into the MACV1 boots and the GORUCK footwear. I know there's going to be more episodes with him in the future because he's just a ton of fun to talk to and a really, really awesome guy. Litch, if you're listening, thank you so much again for taking the time for this call, and I can't wait to talk to you again soon. You're listening to the All Day Rock Off podcast, episode number 114. Thank you so much for the support. Thank you for downloading this podcast. I really hope you enjoy this interview with Litch, because again, I had a ton of fun talking to him. I heard once on back when the GORUCK show was still coming out on podcasts that your nickname's Litch. Do you go by Litch or do you go by Paul?
I go, people who know me, they call me Litch, which is the short form of my last name, Litchfield. So Litch, they go by Litch. But people who don't know me, they go by Paul. You're more than welcome to call me Litch if you feel comfortable. You don't have to.
Well, I just wanted to double check.
Yeah. It's very cool. No problem at all.
That's awesome. So, how did you get that nickname? Did that come because there's multiple Pauls working somewhere, and you're Litch now?
Or? No, I think that because you know the general population in Boston is not the brightest anywhere. So you know. We like to shorten things up just to make things easier. So, no, I think honestly, Brian, it was just one of those deals where it was just easier to, typically you put a Y on people's name, like Smitty or Fitzy or, you know, Jonesy or something, you know, and so it was Litch or Litchy or something like that. You know, people just trade up here in the Northeast. They just do, you know?
Got it.
So I've had that name for a long time.
We had, a lot of people when I was in middle school and high school would just call me Lore, my last name.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Our school in middle school had the genius idea one year of ordering lockers by first name. And we had 10 Bryans.
Oh, yeah.
At the school. Yep. And so, I mean, you walk by and go Brian and everyone turns their head. So all Bryans just got their last names. That was it.
Yeah. So I tell you what, like, I still play a lot of hockey and stuff. So, you'd be Lorzy. Hey, Lorzy, you know, gotta jump on the ice.
That rolls off pretty well.
Yeah. So always you'd be like, hey, Lorzy. Yeah. So just how it goes.
That's different, you know, different parts of the country. It's a big country we got here.
Yeah, without a doubt, right? Yeah.
So your involvement with GORUCK, I mean, I've heard the stories the way, you know, Jason's told it, where he showed up and was kind of, you know, pitching ideas back and forth. Do you want to kind of tell your viewpoint from it, meeting with Jason and all that good stuff?
Yeah, Jason's story sounds good. The truth is that I rolled in one day and I just felt really bad for him, so I figured I'd help him out. You know? No.
I love it.
I'm only kidding.
This is you've got your patents, you've got all of your accomplishments, and now you're doing your charity work.
You know what? As long as it's not plagiarism, I'm going to use that someday with Jason. That's pretty good. No, so basically, Lorzy, I was the vice president of advanced products and advanced concepts at Reebok, and my job was to, me and my team was to, that we were not associated with a specific business unit, like the running team or the tennis team or the basketball team. So we had the opportunity to work across all the product spectrum, including apparel and sporting goods, ice hockey equipment, lacrosse equipment, baseball equipment, and footwear, to come up with new ideas, right? So when one of my dear friends and colleagues at Reebok, who was in charge of the walking division, Martina Yarmarker, she got affiliated with GORUCK through an investigation on what was new and novel and coming up in the world of functional fitness. Reebok had a relationship with CrossFit, you know, new ways to engage everybody in fitness and health and all that. And Reebok at the time also had an affiliation with Spartan Race. So one of the new topics on the horizon back in 13 and 14 was this small company called GoRuck, and that Jason had started. So they started. So Reebok started the relationship, and it wasn't until a few meetings in to the relationship when Jason and Emily and the team came up to visit with Reebok. I got invited to meet with them. They came over to my office. We just kind of started talking product. So there was, for me, a fairly immediate synergy between Jason's approach to product and his passion for it and mine. And so we kind of hit it off, and then it was offered by my friends at Reebok for me to do my first GoRuck event, which I did in Worcester, Massachusetts. And I did a tough one night, and it made a big impression on me. It was a pretty significant event, as everyone's first events are, I think. And I was kind of hooked on it. And so it worked out well. I ended up leaving Reebok about a year or so, year and a half after that, through just, it was time. I had been at Reebok for almost 30 years. So it's time for me to move on. So I started my own consulting business, and Jason asked me to work on the board of advisors. And then he and I kind of immediately got back into working on this footwear project. And we worked on it with kind of a different level of focus and a different level of commitment, because we could work in a much smaller team. We didn't have to accommodate different perspectives. We could just work on product that was hyper-focused on what GoRuck needed.
That's really cool. And I mean, it sounds like before you left Reebok, the team you're on was probably a pretty exciting team. And it's not too often that you hear in a corporate America, style company of these, I don't know if you want to call them rogue teams, but the teams that aren't allied to a certain, division, and kind of the stuff they work on is whatever they want to work on. So that's, you probably got a lot of cool experience there.
Yeah, no, I was super lucky. I've been doing it for Reebok, since I was the original member of this little group back, 28 years ago. And and the job was to basically create new ideas that would add value, whether they be functional, new performance features to a shoe, or new materials, or a new way to speed up manufacturing so that you could deliver shoes quicker and more efficiently to the customer and all that. So there we had that latitude and that luxury. Now, for that extra time that we had that the business unit teams didn't have, we also had to make sure that our stuff was more thorough. We had to make sure that we had everything kind of fully cooked, so that it wasn't just an idea or a one-off piece. It had to be something that was manufacturable and all that. So yeah, Reebok they were generous in allowing us to do that and kind of maintain that department for quite a long time, as long as we did our share of contributing to the company.
Awesome. So through Reebok, you're able to kind of get signed up for your first GoRuck event. And that makes a lot of sense, because if you're going to be designing shoes or even thinking about, shoes for these events, that you want to have a good idea of what happens during them.
Oh yeah, without a doubt.
So who was your cadre for that first event? And I mean, what were your, if you remember, and just kind of what were your thoughts going into it, getting ready for it, the event as a whole, and then how it all finished up?
So, my first cadre, your first cadre, that's a pretty, pretty significant individual, right? So my first was Garrett Noon, and Garrett, he was a Massachusetts guy, grew up in the same I did, so he and I had a great friendship afterwards, and to do so. So Garrett's excellent. But I was kind of pretty much ill prepared for the event. I essentially was traveling, came back from travel, and jumped into the event with my Reebok colleagues, and had very little preparation for it, because I didn't do my homework thoroughly, and I thought it was more going to be something like a Spartan Race or something, where you you know, you race for a few hours and then you finish up and you have some beverage and go home. I didn't quite anticipate 12 and a half plus hour event and all that. So it was it was really, really good. It was super tough. And again, none of them get easier, but you have a perspective. So the first one is you don't know what's going on or what the next phases are to any given event. It was difficult and it was well worth it as well.
So about how far after that, I mean, that first event, did you think that GoRock was a company that you wanted to work with? I mean, you know, when you're doing the events and you're getting beaten down a little, it can be, you're like, man, I never want to see these guys again. But
yeah, no. So Brian, actually, I was convinced I wanted to work with GoRock just from the first time I met Jason and Emily and the team. I think that for me, I tend to approach product in a particular fashion. Jason brings a degree of enthusiasm and focus and passion and enough humor to it with also a ton of seriousness. And he's not afraid to work with you and also to run you over. And I really like that. And I really like the fact that it was all about the company. It was all about doing the product with absolute laser focus for the end user. It wasn't him. It wasn't about anything other than doing what was right to support whoever was using the product. And the event certainly reinforced that. The event kind of solidified why I was pretty stoked about GoRock. But I was already kind of committed to working with GoRock just from that first meeting.
Yeah, Jason does really have a level of excitement when you talk to him, right, about everything coming up in the future, kind of the direction that he wants GoRock to go. And it's hard to talk to him and not get excited as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, because, you know, he's not only engaging, he tends to be a pretty driven individual. And what I like about it is that everything he says to you, he's probably done it at least once. You know what I mean? So it's not like he's just sitting back as the, you know, the old overseer and you know, you should do this, you should do that. It's actually the fact that he is he's party to the whole process. And so that's I like that. I really enjoy that.
Yeah. And I think a lot of people have seen that on a more physical aspect with him, you know, doing the first Star Course and then doing multiple Star Course events since there. He's still out there doing events and having a good time.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And the other thing, Brian, which is kind of which I have found refreshing is that there is kind of a truth and kind of a brutal honesty to what's communicated at GoRock, what people say, and how the company is, how people who are associated with the company, both inside and in the community, are made available to all of the information. So you know, there's no hiding behind, you know, kind of some kind of a smoke screen. So I actually applaud GoRock and Jason and everyone on the team for their willingness to be candid and be truthful. And it's just it may sound like that's how the world is, but it just isn't, particularly in corporate life.
Oh yeah, corporate life is quite a bit different.
Yeah, absolutely.
So moving over to the Mach V1, I mean, that's the first piece of footwear GoRock has came out with. You were instrumental, as far as everything I've read and everything I've heard, in making that happen.
Yep.
How was working with GoRock, which is a relatively small company, especially compared to something like Reebok? You know, how was working with them different than working in your previous role?
So there's actually quite a few similarities in working with GoRock compared to working with Reebok or Adidas or any of the companies. But for me, because GoRock is similar to my advanced concept team at Reebok, we were kind of a self-sufficient, very, very small organization. We had a certain charge that we had to live up to inside of the big corporation. So we were able to live somewhat autonomously inside of the corporation. So the transition to a small kind of intimate company like GoRuck was not difficult for me. It wasn't a big change from a kind of an operating philosophy. What's been interesting and somewhat challenging is that I've getting factories to work with us has been a bit of a challenge. I was able to engage some of my longtime friends and colleagues around the world who I've worked with in footwear factories and footwear companies for them to basically take a meeting with me and Jason. Would fly around the world, would meet with people and pitch GoRuck and let them know that, you know, we want to do footwear, and while we make fewer shoes in production than some of these big companies make just when they're making their own salesman samples, but you know, the promise and the potential of what GoRuck has, coupled with hopefully some well-made product, you know, sky's the limit kind of thing. And fortunately, there have been people who out there in the footwear manufacturing world and the apparel and gear manufacturing world that have listened to us, have kind of taken the time to learn some of the story, and they've bought in. So the transition for me going from, you know, Reebok to a big company at Reebok to GoRuck was not difficult because I worked inside a small organization inside of Reebok. But the biggest challenge was getting good and premier factories to do business with us because we were very small.
Yeah, I can see how that'd be tough. I mean, I've worked with a number of smaller factories since all they rock off is still very, very small. But, you know, getting timely responses can be tough. Getting, you know, access to some of the better machines can be tough. And I can imagine that on footwear, it's just tenfold.
Well, it can be. Footwear is deceptively more complicated because of all of the kind of disparate parts between the molds and the materials to make the outsole or the foam for the midsole cushioning or the uppers and materials and all that. So you have to plug into a bunch of different material streams, if you will, and raw material streams and components and all that. What we were able to do, again, through some colleagues of mine that I've worked with around the world for, you know, 30 years or more, we were able to not just go to the small factories, but go to some of these big factories that make, quite frankly, some of the most well-known brands in the world. And they have welcomed us, and they're willing to take a chance on us. So the advantage we have now is that GoRuck is actually making product in some of the most preeminent factories around the world, both in the USA and out in, in the USA, around the world, I'll say, in Asia, in USA and in Central America. We're working on the best raw materials, the best components, and ultimately the best factories to put all this stuff together. And again, we've been able to do that through some relationships I've had over the years, and then also the ability for Jason and I to come in and Jason to essentially just present GoRuck. And once you present GoRuck, there's a certain energy to the whole thing where people who get it, they get it quickly. They're like, oh wow, this is something special.
Absolutely. And I feel bad for not, you know, touching on this yet, but you've mentioned that you've, you know, you're working with companies that you've had relationships for in the past, some as old as 30 plus years.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you've been working in this area for a long time in the footwear, in the shoe game.
You calling me old?
I'm trying to circle around that one. Get to the other side without going right through the middle.
All right, I'll pretend I didn't hear that. Go ahead.
How does, you know, I guess, why shoes? How does one get involved in this? And, you know, what brought you to footwear and kept you there?
Okay, so I had finished my master's degree in muscle biochemistry and human performance, and I was up in, I had an opportunity to do human performance research up in Aberdeen, Scotland, at a place called the Institute for Offshore and Environmental Medicine, back in 1983, 84. And did some great, great research and on performance, and also did a small project while I was up there doing research with Nike. They had just developed this new air system called Nike Air, and they wanted to see if some of the biochemical stuff that we were looking at to assess muscle damage, if in fact that would be reduced using their air shoes. So I did some of that research. Never thought anything about it because it was nice. It was a nice way to get some free shoes, do some research, and then also carry on with some more focused work I was doing out there. But I came back to Massachusetts to finish my PhD in biochemistry and human physiology, and ran into a problem with my department, and my department chairman wanted me to do some things that was were beyond the pale for me. They were at least unethical. I thought they were pretty illegal. I had to do with the, you know, basically. Anyways, it just wasn't good. So I ended up leaving a PhD program unexpectedly, and because of my brief work with Nike on doing research, through some colleagues, they said, "Hey, there's a small company down in Boston, you know, about an hour and a half from where you're living, called Reebok. They could be looking for somebody. Why don't you get on there?" And I went down there, literally, Brian, for a brief interview, just to as a courtesy to one of my buddies who invited me down. And I was otherwise heading down to the University of Florida at Gainesville to do strength research and research in the Department of Cardiology. And so, anyways, so I was going to be a university nerd. And my interview at Reebok was okay, and then we ended up hanging out and playing some basketball in a city league that was there. And then I was drinking beer with them and eating pizza that night. And I thanked them for everything. And they said, "Oh, we do this all the time." And I said, "What?" And they go, "Yeah, this is what we do. This is our job." And I'm like, "Oh, crap." So I immediately kind of accepted the job. And I figured I'd do it for 6 months, make some money, and then go back and finish my PhD. And 6 months turned into a lot longer. So I never went back. And I just found that it was a good time. It was a great time to be in the footwear and sporting goods business because it was super popular. And I found that through my biochem education and background, I could work with the chemical companies and the material folks very well. So I brought kind of a different slant or a different focus to my job than other people had inside of the shoe business. And so I was able to kind of take advantage of that, and was through after a series of different job roles inside of Reebok, I ended up working on making some new ideas. And that's when they started this little group called the Advanced Technologies Group, and they asked me to start it, so I did. And one of the projects I worked on ended up being a product called the Reebok Pump, which was popular back in the day. And so the pump was that helped to really kind of launch a bunch of momentum for Reebok, but it also allowed me to get some bandwidth inside of the company to be able to do more of that stuff. So that's how I got into the business. It was quite unexpected, a lot more Forrest Gump kind of series of steps than it was any kind of like deliberate plan.
That's rad. And I mean, calling the Reebok pump just popular might be the understatement of the call here.
Well, you know, it was, I mean, so yeah. So Brian, yeah, the Reebok pump, it went really well, but I mean, it was, and I'm proud to say it was a good product. Proud to say it worked well, but really at the time, Reebok's popularity and the energy inside the company that got behind it, from marketing to advertising to sales, I mean, everything was working well. So the pump became its own entity. It became its own kind of like energy, if you will. And I've gotten over the course of the years a lot of credit for it. And I'm also very clear that I did my role. I created the thing, but I mean, Reebok itself made it bigger than life. I certainly didn't.
So kind of shifting back over, I kind of apologize for going back in time there, but I realized
that's totally fine. I super appreciate it. I tell you, Brian, I appreciate the questions about it, and I don't mind them at all. And I always, every time I talk about it, it's like I'm talking about it in a third person, because it seems like I know what I did. And if you ever come out to Boston, I'll show you some of my archives that still have the original samples and all that kind of stuff. But it's, as a matter of fact, next time you're in New Hampshire, let me know and we make a little excursion out this way. But, it's pretty funny. The stories that are done on it, make it seem like this great, you know, kind of, we did A, then B happened, then we did C, and then D happened. It was work really hard, try to be at the right place at the right time, and then get super lucky, right? I mean, that's the honest to God's truth. So,
I mean, that's how a lot of that stuff goes, right? I mean,
yeah, absolutely, yeah. And I'm not hiding behind it, and I'm also not embarrassed by it. But I mean, that's kind of the truth. I mean, I'd love to tell you that, you know, I was sitting out back with, you know, test tubes and, you know, Bunsen burners, and we were cooking this up and this was our plan, but that's not how it went, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, for every one success I've got, I probably have like at least a dozen, you know, failures. Oh, and at
dude,
least.
So we literally, you know, we have a wall of fame, right? And it's a nice, you know, little display. I have a hall of shame that would take up more than 100,000 square feet of warehouse. You know, it's like but your hall of shame is actually what informs you to hopefully get to a couple of items of the wall of fame.
Absolutely. I mean, it's everything you learned from making those. And I mean, if you don't keep going, then you're never going to have a hall of fame.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yep.
So, and it's funny because everyone, you know, you go on the tour and all you see is the Hall of Fame. You never go, you know, they never open up the doors and show you behind everything, the 10,000 failures that it took to get those items on the wall.
Seriously. Yeah. So Brian, the other thing about making product, which is just very interesting to me, is that like making product is kind of the most humbling experience that I can imagine, because, you know, you always start out with these ideas and invariably the product, or the performance of that product, informs you otherwise. You know what I mean? And so, you know, your idea starts, let's say, right in the center of a clock, and it could end up anywhere from midnight to, you know, to 11 p.m. kind of thing. It'll go anywhere and everywhere, and wherever the product goes, if you're smart enough, you'll follow that path and learn which avenues are dead ends and which ones are the ones to pursue, you know?
Yeah, it's always interesting. I mean, that might also be a huge understatement. It's, you know,
intriguing. No, but it is interesting.
And it's, what have you noticed, I mean, any major differences? I'm sure there are some, right, between, you know, working in product at Reebok, where you're, you know, you're not aligned to any certain vertical you've got. You're just, you know, you're discovering new things versus, you know, working with GORUCK, where you're kind of, from what it sounds like, responsible for the entire shoe.
Well, yeah. So this is where, to me, GORUCK is such a breath of fresh air, not only for Jason and the people at GORUCK and all that, but like at Reebok, we would work on a product that we wanted to create some sort of functionality. And I'll give you an example: the GORUCK shoe. So Reebok had a brief relationship, or the foundation of a relationship with GORUCK, and we would work on the early boots, GORUCK boots, through my group, my advanced concepts group with Jason, and I would present them, and invariably, Reebok would need to get input from a lot of different business units. Folks, which is appropriate. That's just how the thing goes. And everybody needed to have some kind of an opinion, and some of the people needed to have an impact on that product. So what happens is you take a product that you hope is kind of dead on center, and then you had to accommodate different people's perspectives. And some of them were based on their experiences inside of that performance. And some of them were just based on the fact they had an opinion. So at GORUCK, the difference for me is that at GORUCK, when we work on a product, in a similar way that I worked on it inside of my small group at Reebok. But here at GoRock, when I work on a product and, you know, myself and Jason and a couple other folks say like, hey, this is what we want to make, that product will have already been through a number of cadre, a number of events, a number of testing scenarios that we set up. And I know that when we get to that green light, it's just go. You know, there's no accommodating someone else's opinion. And so to me, there's a very clean process here at GoRock that we make product that is purposeful and focused, and it does not have to accommodate peripheral people. We do it for the exact purpose of why we want to have it for the end customer or the end user. And I don't know if that's confusing or clear, but to me there's just a I'll try to say that again. The GoRock product process is very clean, it's very precise, and it's very directed to the end user and why you want a certain performance feature for that product. I don't have to appease anybody. I don't have to make it, you know, different in order to pass it through a business unit filter or anything like that. All I need to do is make what we describe and make sure that it's repeatable in a manufacturing environment, and that it is that it matches all of the performance criteria and the style criteria we need.
That's clear to me. And that's just awesome to hear, because it's, I mean, like you mentioned, when you're working in corporate-ish America, I mean, everyone wants to have their little stamp on it. And
absolutely,
GoRock just wants the, you know, they do have their design criteria, but it's the performance criteria is probably upmost in, you know, the biggest part. And so they just want it to work. Have you by any chance seen that, that product management video about the tank?
No, I haven't.
I'll send you a link to it, but it's...
Oh, thank you.
It's and I'll post one in the show notes for people who are listening, but it's basically this, they're trying to design this tank and everyone has all these different parts and it was supposed to be one thing and it ends up like completely different. It doesn't satisfy any of the needs and it's, you know, way over budget. It took way longer. And I'm not sure how, you know, how true the story really is in the video, but the video is hilarious. And it definitely gives you an idea into how a ton of oversight and people having their hands on product can really change and shape an initial idea into something that doesn't work for anyone.
No, and so one of the things that's happening, and I don't know about this tank thing, but certainly in the consumer world, a lot of times if you make a product and it's different, to me, different falls into two buckets. One is that it's a new standard of, you know, performance and or some feature or benefit that adds value. Sometimes different is just goofy, you know, because some designers wanted to, you know, be outrageous. But when it's not, when the difference is based on a performance feature, that's when you take notice to it. And I'll give you two examples that are on both extremes. You know, remember Vibram? They made the five finger shoe.
Absolutely.
So that basically started as a windsurfing shoe, and then people started running it in the barefoot running, and so that was completely different. And when it first started, it wasn't even accepted at Vibram. It was kind of shelved for a while. Until it found a home, let's say. Now, you know, if it was enough, but it was peculiar until it became the norm. And then by the same token, Hoka, have you had any Hoka shoes?
Yeah, Hoka 1-1.
So the Hoka shoes are the exact opposite of that. And some former Reebok colleagues own that company and run it. And it's basically a big plush, complete kind of midsole and bottom unit that is intended to protect the foot. So both of these things, I mean, if you look at a Hoka shoe, it looks almost orthopedic how thick it is, right? But it works super well, and it works super well, and yet they're bookends, right, as far as the type of shoe that they are. So you know, to get shoes like that or product like that out the door, it has to have a purpose. You know, their visual difference and the styling difference has to have a purpose and has to have a reason. So, and I think that that is inside of a company, what happens is that you end up getting to a middle ground where everybody takes the differences and they want to round off the edges. They want to, you know, kind of make it all vanilla so that it just ends up being, so that any product that goes out the door for any big company typically is not objectionable to anybody. And from my perspective, Brian, if the product is not objectionable, that means it doesn't make a difference to anybody. And if it doesn't make a difference to anybody, then why do it, right? I mean, so anytime you make a product, it's gonna, I think, a product that has a certain attribute, it's going to work for some people, and it's not going to work well for others. It's just the way it is. And you need to be confident in launching that product and stepping out with it and owning it, you know, for the good and the bad. And that's the thing that continues to encourage me and impress me at GoRuck. When we make products, we do it with a certain target and a certain performance in mind, and we don't cut corners to make sure everybody likes it. You know, if the end user if the performance features hold up to what the standards are for that end user, then we make it. And it's super refreshing. It makes the whole product creation process really clean. It doesn't make it easy, but it makes it really clean.
And it makes it so that what you end up with in the end is something it sounds like you're really proud of.
Oh, absolutely. And yet that doesn't mean it's going to be universally accepted by everybody. And yet, that's not really the point. The point is, for the end user, you can say, you know, proudly, "Hey, we made this. Here's the performance features, and here's what you can expect from a value standpoint for this particular product."
Yeah, I think you described that perfectly. I mean, it's great cool examples, and it's true, right? I mean, if what you're making doesn't, I don't want to say offend anyone, but you know, if it doesn't.
Yeah, no, you're right. If the product you're making is bland, then it doesn't get noticed. Now, if it's outrageous just because of, you know, just because it wants to be outrageous, then you're kind of goofy. But if it is different and you say like, "Hey, it's supposed to be this," and people have this experience, they're like, "Wow, that's cool," you know. And products that have a purpose and have a point of view are the only way to go.
I love it, and I'm so glad that you're working with GoRuck on all this stuff, because I've got a pair of the MacB ones. They're great, and I mean, I know you've got a call with Jason in 5, so
yeah, that's right. So Brian, thank you. But I got to tell you this, man. I am super lucky to work with you guys. I am. This is like a breath of fresh air to work with you guys in the community, GoRuck as an organization, because it's a challenge to make things that hold up to your standard. And it's way cool.
Thank you. I mean, thank you for making products for us. And Lich, man, thanks for taking all this time to talk with me today. I'm glad that you're enjoying this as much as we are.
Thanks, man. I super appreciate it. And it really is a privilege. And I'm hoping to be able to stay in the game and keep on doing this for a while with you all.
So if you're staying in the game, doing this for a while, should we count on some more GoRuck footwear?
I suspect so. Let's put it this way. I've never seen Jason sit down and kind of kick his feet back and say, "Okay, we're done."
True. So true.
I will tell you, bro, I think that we have not even yet gotten the traction that we're going to get on where we're going. I think that, you know, the MacB 1 is a great start, but there's so much more to do, and it's very cool, and we got a lot behind the scenes that are being worked on now, and then, yeah, I think you're going to like it.
Lich, I really appreciate you taking the time to talk with me today. I'm going to let you go to catch your next call, but I'd love to circle back and talk with you again sometime in the future, have you back on, because this was just a ton of fun for me.
Yeah, Lorsey, any time at all, without a doubt. And I really appreciate it. And I would love to talk to you anytime, on the record or off the record. Let's keep this going. So thank you for doing this, and thanks for being part of the whole gig.
Thank you so much for listening to the All Day Rock Off podcast. This has been episode number 114. If you want links to anything we talked about during the episode, you can head on over to the show notes, alldayrockoff.com/114. And all the information should be available for you right there. Lich, thank you so much again for being on. That was a ton of fun, and I can't wait to talk to you again soon. If you're listening and you want to support the All Day Rock Off podcast, you can do that through a handful of different ways. First off, you can leave reviews on either Apple Podcasts or on Facebook. Just search for All Day Rock Off. Those are super helpful. You can also buy stuff from the All Day Rock Off online store, alldayrockoff.com/store. And then finally, you can support on Patreon, patreon.com/alldayrockoff. And I want to take a quick minute to say thank you to Kevin for supporting on Patreon. Thank you so much. It's truly appreciated. And I just want you to know that. I really hope you enjoyed this episode, and I can't wait to talk to you again next week. As always, don't forget, attitude is everything. Keep yours positive, and drink hard, rock harder.